You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G, D-O-D-G-E-R-S, team, 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 all.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar and is super duper healthy. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code Locked On and you'll get $10 off your first order. Locked On Dodgers is the daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Essential, along with Vince Imperio of Chavez Ravine Fiends. Vincent, how the heck are you?
Jeff, I'm doing well. We actually have not the best of news, but we have relevant things to talk about today, so I'm excited.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one. Definitely plenty of content. So plans for today, we're going to talk about the Dodgers Zoom party, and we're going to talk about various goings-on in the land of labor relations and cheap and not cheap teams and all the other things related to COVID-19 and Major League Baseball. So that's the plan for today. But first, we want to remind you all, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right, Vince, first things first, we'll get to more of the news related to Major League Baseball, labor relations, and stuff in the second half. But first, we want to talk really quickly about the Dodgers and their decision that they made. Basically, they announced today that they're cutting costs to avoid layoffs and furloughs, that anybody making over $75,000 a year will be taking a pay cut, with the higher cuts being for the higher paid employees. So basically anybody making under $75,000 a year won't be impacted. They will get their full amount. And then I think the pay cuts range anywhere from, was it 15 to 35%, something like that?
Yeah, I know the high mark was 35. I don't remember the low mark.
Yeah. So somebody making 80 grand a year is still gonna, make 65 grand or whatever, probably. I don't know, Vince, what were your, there's mixed emotions on anything like this, but what were your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's good that they went the route of trying to avoid layoffs and furloughs. We've seen other teams not go that route. Even just the other team down the 5 freeway, they got a lot of flack last week for, letting go a lot of people and not really making an effort, or at least that we see, not really making an effort to accommodate these trying times. But yeah, I mean, it is not easy at this point. I think we saw another figure where the Dodgers are gonna on track to lose like $232 million this year, which is not insignificant regardless of how rich all the owners are. But it's good that they are actively trying to avoid layoffs and furloughs and making an effort. And, realistically, the people that are making a lot more money theoretically should likely be able to afford, a little bit of a pay reduction, and in some cases, a big part of a pay reduction, but it goes to the greater good of the whole organization. So it's overall better than it could have been. And, I'm not going to say it's great, but it's good.
Yeah, and without us having access to a list of all their employees and how much they make, it's hard to tell exactly. For me, the big question is, where do you draw the line? Why 75,000? Because honestly, living in Los Angeles, like most of the Dodgers employees do, 75,000 a year is not a ton of money. You can survive on that, but you're not living the high life on that. And so, but it's obviously the bigger ones would be, I don't know if we know how much Andrew Friedman makes, but I assume it's several million dollars a year. And, you know, so he would be in the bigger, the higher percentage, obviously. And so, you know, if say he makes $5 million a year, well, they just saved $1.5 million just with him, you know. And so, you know, I think it's the right approach to have the people who can most afford to take the pay cut, take the pay cuts. I don't know. Like you said, the Angels didn't take that approach. We'll talk more about the A's probably in the second segment and some of the stuff they've been doing. And so, yeah, it is good to see the Dodgers trying to do what's quote unquote right. You know, I don't know if there is a right answer here, because obviously there are some people on the extreme end saying nobody should be taking pay cuts because the owners are rich. And, you know, then there's the other end that, you know, have little sympathy for anybody. And, you know, this falls somewhere in between. And I think probably most people fall somewhere in between those two extremes, just a question of where on the spectrum you are. But yeah, it is good that they won't be laying people off. So I guess that's my main takeaway. The other thing that happened on Tuesday, normally these Twitter Zoom parties are on Mondays, but because of Memorial Day, this week it was on Tuesday, and it's the first one that you and I both actually watched. We've split the previous four. I watched two of them, you watched two of them, but today we both watched it. We don't need to recap the whole thing, but what was a highlight for you, Vince?
Yeah, well, the fact that they kind of went to what we've been talking about and keeping it strictly on the players, whether that was, you know, they just couldn't find someone or whatever, or that was a concerted effort to just focus on the players. But yeah, it was a good group. I think this one was probably the best group in terms of, you know, back and forth and camaraderie. They had Lux and Buehler and Jock and Andrew Friedman and AJ Pollock, a little more on the outside, but those guys, you know, the way the players talk to Andrew Friedman is interesting to see. He, you know, he's the president of baseball operations, but you know, Walker Buehler's throwing jabs at him. Jack Peterson's throwing jabs at him. So that was, you know, a little bit of a highlight for me. And then obviously the question that I tweeted about, that a lot of people tweeted about, where someone asked AJ Pollock if he was going to help his teammates out about learning how to play without fans because of his time in Arizona. And then he alluded to the comment he made during FanFest about not playing in front of a lot of fans that he said he still gets flack for in Arizona. So that question was funny. And just like I said, the overall rapport of this week's group was pretty good.
Yeah. So there was the ones you mentioned, plus Ross Stripling. I'm trying to remember. Alana Rizzo hosted it. And then there were two other, Steve Sachs was the only non-current player. And then there's one other player who was on there that I'm forgetting, because I know there was a total of 9 people, not counting Dieter Ruhle. But I can't remember.
Was there, I thought the top left was empty.
Oh, that's right. There were 9 spots, but the top left was empty. We're not forgetting anybody. Okay, yeah. So it was those ones. It was, you know, no Justin Turner, who's been kind of a mainstay on those. Joe Davis has been on a lot of them. But, you know, yeah, it was a good back and forth. I thought if there was one downside, maybe it was Steve Sachs, just because, I don't know, he was my brother's favorite player growing up, and so I have a soft spot for him, but he doesn't quite have the connection to the current Dodgers that, you know, a guy like even Steve Garvey does, just because Garvey has stayed with the team. I don't know, did you feel that way about Sachs?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, the only connection he really had to these guys was AJ Pollock, who, when he coached at the Diamondbacks, he said that he was one of his favorite coaches. But other than that, like, even when he complimented Gavin Lux really well, you could tell Lux appreciated it, but it was not coming from, you know, a standpoint of maybe someone else that's been on the Zooms or someone else from the Dodger organization saying it.
But yeah, so this one was different, but it was a good one, and I'm glad we both got to watch it. In a minute, we will talk about some of the labor relations developments, but first, let's talk about the muscle relation developments. Built Bar is a protein bar. We've talked about it a lot. You know what it is, but I'm going to tell you anyway. It's a protein bar that doesn't taste like a protein bar. It tastes like something that tastes good, which can't really describe any other protein bar. It basically tastes like a candy bar, but it's also more healthy than most protein bars. I don't know if it's sorcery or wizardry or alchemy or what, but somehow they made a bar that has the flavor of, you know, chocolate and deliciousness without having to add a ton of sugar, because it has about 1/7 the sugar and carbs of your average protein bar while having just as much protein. The mint and brownie one, for example, has 15 grams of protein, only 110 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, which is crazy. And it, you know, it tastes like a mint brownie. Who doesn't want a mint brownie? I want a mint brownie right now, Vince. I think I have a mint brownie Built Bar in my pantry, so I will go grab it when we're done recording this, probably. But you all should check out Built Bar if you haven't already. All you got to do is go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. And this week only, they are also offering $5 off every box. That's in addition to the $10 off your first order. So, I mean, they're perilously close to paying you to eat these things. And that would be a win-win-win because, you know, they taste really good and they hardly cost anything right now with promo code LOCKEDON at builtbar.com. So make it happen, yo, and keep it locked on, Dodgers. All right, let's do our obscure former Dodger in our looking back on the Locked On Podcast Network. This year we are looking at 2010. Unlike 1990 and 2000, the Dodgers did not go 86 and 76 in 2010. They went 80 and 82, which is worse. They finished in fourth place. It was between the glory years. They had the great years in 2008 and 2009, and then they didn't make the postseason again until 2013, right?
Yeah.
So this was during the time that Frank McCourt was bleeding the team dry and sucking its blood. But one guy who jumped out at me when I was looking at the 2010 roster was a name I hadn't thought about in a while, and that is Carlos Monasterios. And I was surprised to see that Carlos Monasterios only pitched that 1 year in the big leagues. He pitched 88 and a third innings for the Dodgers, and then his career was done. I think the reason is because I always got him and Ramon Troncoso mixed up. And Troncoso lasted longer with the Dodgers. But Monasterios was from Venezuela. Troncoso was from Dominican Republic. Those are significantly different places. But they both speak Spanish. And, you know, they have Spanish names. So I don't know why. But Monasterios was originally signed by the Yankees. Then he was traded to the Phillies in the Bobby Abreu trade. And then the Mets took him in the Rule 5 draft and immediately traded him to the Dodgers at the end of 2009, and so he had to be on the Dodgers roster in 2010, and he was, and he performed, you know, somewhat well. He, like I said, 88 and a third innings, 4.38 ERA, not great, but, you know, he did all right for a Rule 5 pick, but then he started the 2011 season in AAA, pitched one game, gave up 6 runs in 4 innings, and then had Tommy John surgery, and then had setbacks and never made it back to the big leagues or even to the minor leagues. He's been pitching he pitched in the Mexican League for a couple of years, but looks like he hasn't pitched anywhere in 5 or 6 years now at this point, even though he's only 34 years old right now. But Carlos Monasterios is our obscure former Dodger. You have any Monasterios thoughts?
No, I remember him. He's one of those guys that, you know, just one of those guys, a bullpen guy, like you said, Monasterios, Troncoso, you know, Yancy Brazaban, guys like that.
Who, Ronald Belisario.
Yeah, exactly. There's not to get all Latin on it, but, you know, that's where they're connected at. So basically all he is for me, but definitely a guy I remember.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk, I guess first let's talk a little bit about the A's and what the A's announced. The A's are following the Angels' route of they are furloughing basically all their scouts right after the draft. That seems like an interesting approach to take to say, okay, do your best work, and then as soon as the draft is over, you no longer get to work here. It seems, I guess, because they're furloughing them, you know, maybe they're hoping that the scouts' loyalties will force them to do their best work, in the hopes that they will have a job back at some point. but doesn't seem like the best way to treat your employees. And then they also sent an email to all their minor leaguers saying, oh, by the way, that $400 a week we've been giving you, yeah, that stops next week. So the A's, whose owner is worth $2.3 billion, have made these moves to save $1 million or $2 million this year, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, the A's are known as kind of the team, you know, Billy Bean, Moneyball, that kind of stuff, making the most of a low payroll. But when it comes down to this, I mean, it's a bad look overall. And, you know, there's different points on either side you can make. But at the end of the day, you know, Jeff Passan broke it down to where I think it would cost the owner about $1.1 million or somewhere around there to kind of keep paying these guys the rest of the way. And then when it was first announced, you know, when all this stuff was kind of going on, the big thing on Twitter that you would see was these players can't file for unemployment because they're technically still employees. And now the A's aren't paying them, but they can become free agents and sign with another team. So it's just a mess overall. And, you know, you hope that maybe they'll reverse course on it because of bad PR, but at this point, you know, the A's have kind of been known as that kind of team, and I don't know if the owner really cares at all about bad PR.
Yeah, and, you know, the fact is they knew what the PR was going to be. It's not like they're surprised by this reaction, so if they were going to make a decision based on public relations, they didn't need to make the wrong decision first because they knew what the reaction would be to that. I'm interested to see if this ends up having some sort of legal ramifications, you know, for whatever reason. I don't know if this ties in directly to MLB's antitrust exemption or not, but it really, from a legal standpoint, and obviously I'm not an attorney because I have a soul. No offense to you attorneys out there. I'm sure you're great. But legally, it seems really shady to say you can't file for unemployment because you are under contract with a company, even though that company refuses to pay you any money. It seems like having a job that pays $0 should be the same thing as not having a job when it comes to filing for unemployment. And it seems also like this contract that they signed, it seems like it's a one-sided contract, like only the players are bound by it. If the team isn't bound to actually pay them the money, then why are they bound to be part of that team? And, you know, it was stuff like this that, you know, it was lawsuits in the 70s, Andy Messersmith and, you know, Kurt Flood before that, and, you know, a few guys that led to the free agency that there currently is. And I wouldn't be surprised to see some sort of legal challenges come out of this that could fundamentally change the minor league free agency system. I don't know exactly what it would be, and maybe it would just be forcing Major League Baseball and the Players Union to maybe consider the minor league players when they're doing their CBAs. Maybe it's that minor league forms its own union, or a branch of the players, the Major League Players Union is to cover minor leaguers and they have a seat at the table in CBA negotiations. I don't know what it is, but it seems like there's going to be some sort of legal ramifications here.
Yeah. Not to reduce it to, you know, I'm thinking, you know, some hot shot young lawyer who's really into baseball kind of jumps on this, does it all with the pro bono, and just, you know, takes the MLB to court and wins and gets somehow minor leaguers some better benefits or a union or something like that. So hopefully it plays out in somewhat that fashion. And then you can say you heard it here first.
Yeah. And there's already one lawyer who is a former minor league baseball player. Garrett Brushhouse has been trying to do things for minor leaguers, and, you know, maybe this helps them. I don't know, but seems like something's got to give here, because as of right now, there's going to be 200 A's minor leaguers next week who have zero money coming in and no recourse. So that's not right. The other big thing going on is, as always, these things get leaked before they get officially announced, and we got word of the proposal that Major League Baseball is sending to the Players Union. It's something, obviously, it's a first proposal. It's not going to be accepted, but it sure does. It sure is interesting to look at. I'll break it down quickly. Basically, Major League Baseball is proposing to pay the players less than the straight prorated amount of their salaries, which they either did or didn't, depending on who you ask, agree to in March. The owners say they didn't know that they were going to be playing without fans, and that affects their income, blah, 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 blah. We've talked about that, and we'll probably get into it more. But so basically, instead of, they had agreed to do a prorated amount, so roughly half their salaries, because 82 games is roughly half of 162. And so all the players are going to be making roughly half of what they were under contract for, because they were playing half the games. But Major League Baseball's proposal proposes cutting that more. They propose to pay 90% of that prorated amount to anybody making the league minimum or less. They're proposed to pay 72.5% of every dollar between $563,500 and $1 million, 50% of for every dollar between $1 million and $5 million, 40% for every dollar between $5 and $10 million, and then 30% between $10 and $20 million, 20% over $20 million. And what this means in practice is that the guys making less would have their salaries cut less. And so, you know, if you're making the league minimum, it would already be cut to about 285,000. And then you would get 90% of that. So instead of your 285, you'd get 256 and change. Whereas a guy like Mike Trout, who is the highest paid player, his salary this year is supposed to be 37.7 ish million. And he would get instead 5.7 million, which is, you know, and you know, his prorated salary would be 19 million, and he would get 5.7. So it's a huge cut for the higher paid players. I don't know, Vince, there's a lot to unpack there. What were your initial thoughts?
Yeah, the initial thoughts and kind of what you see on the surface is that this is the MLB trying to divide the union. You know, obviously there's players that aren't making so much that aren't losing as much, so they might be more willing to play under those circumstances, whereas other guys are maybe not so much willing to do that. And I think the thing we have to remember here is that it's not necessarily the players being greedy. Yes, can Mike Trout survive off $7 million? Yes, he'll be able to survive. But it's just, it's the inequality between the owners and the players and how that plays out. You know, the owners are losing money, then therefore the players should lose money. But they already agreed to the money that they were going to lose earlier this year. Now, you know, based on semantics, the owners are going to try to say that, you know, this without fans wasn't covered in that. So now they want to pay them even less. And, you know, I think they did up the playoff bonuses, but it still wouldn't make up for what players are going to lose this year. And it just comes down to a case of, you know, how willing are they to negotiate? And, you know, obviously the first proposal from one side is not going to be anywhere near what the final proposal will be. And when the Players Union comes back and with their revised proposal, you know, it's probably not going to be anywhere near what they agreed to or anything that you would deem fair. But eventually they got to settle on the middle ground. So that's the big part of it is, you know, we're going to see a lot of stuff, and we've already seen a lot of stuff the past few weeks and in the next couple weeks. But, you know, there's no set deadline, but they do want to start up in June to get the new spring training going, and you start playing in July. So if they want all that to happen, it's got to come rather quickly. And it's just a matter of, you know, the owners conceding, the players conceding, and them meeting in the middle. And that's just where it is right now. But there's not really, you know, you can't see it from the lens directly of all these players are being greedy, because, you know, if you're doing half your job but they want to pay you less than half of what you're supposed to make, you're not going to be happy about it either. Just the fact that it's way more money than likely you're making right now is not really the point. It's the principle, and you know, you can't just let the owners win every time, especially when you have a union that's supposed to be a strong union and not conceding to the owners every time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the owners, I feel like the owners have won the last couple of rounds of CBA negotiations. It's part of the reason that I believe that Tony Clark is lucky to still have his job, because I think he's pretty bad at it. You know, and there's a lot of hatred for the owners, and I get it. But, you know, when everything is collectively bargained, you got to put some of the blame on the head of the players union doing a crappy job of collectively bargaining. But this is one of those things where, you know, I think you're right that what ownership is expecting is to make this proposal and then eventually settle somewhere in between. And I don't know that the players are even going to go for that, because I don't know that they should. I think we might end up, the final answer might be something along these lines where the higher paid players take more of a hit, but I don't think it could possibly end up being anywhere near these numbers. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up, you know, seeing something more along the lines of, you know, because this goes down to 20%. It's a tiered system. And so it's just like the, you know, the marginal income tax, where that most people don't understand either. So I don't know why I just brought it up. But, you know, every dollar between $20 million and $30 million, Mike Trout is only going to get paid, you know, 30% of, or 20%, or whatever it is. But 20% is the lowest marginal rate in this proposal. And I expect that the final answer will be north of 50% for the lowest rate. I think, you know, with the Mike Trout being due to make $19 in his prorated salary, I don't think the players are going to agree to anything that has him making less than 15-ish million, and this proposal has him at 7 million. And so I don't think the middle ground is likely. I think the players are going to push for a lot higher, a lot closer to what they should be getting than the middle ground. And, you know, if they don't, I think it's a failure on Tony Clark's part again, and the union's part, and it doesn't bode well for the future of labor relations. But, you know, The bottom line is, I've said it before here, I've said it on Twitter, you know, owners have reaped huge rewards for being very profitable the last many years, and owning a business is a risk-reward proposition. And I absolutely have never begrudged the owners the rewards. I don't, you know, I think a lot of people are being disingenuous. I think there are people who are saying right now owners have to take on that risk, who also don't like the owners reaping the rewards when it is profitable. And personally, I believe in the risk reward proposition of owning a business. I think it's great that baseball owners make a lot of money when the sport is profitable. I think it's on the players union to negotiate better to get more of that money if that's what they want. But owners have to take on this risk, because if they're not taking on the risk, they don't deserve the reward. And the fact is, there's no guarantee in life when you own a business that you will be profitable, whether that business is a taco truck or a Major League Baseball team. There's no guarantee of profitability. And if you want the rewards of profitability, you got to take on the risk when something like a global pandemic makes you not profitable one year.
And if you just look at, you know, going back to the minor leaguers, you just go back to that. I mean, they haven't been paid fair wages for a long time now, and baseball is bringing in the most money it ever has. So, you know, it doesn't get passed down when they are profitable. So that's why you said, like, you know, we're not gonna. I don't expect to feel sorry for owners right now, because they're not, you know, making hundreds of millions of dollars like they would normally would. And like I said, it's risk reward. And if you're not able to handle that or you don't want to handle that, a lot of these teams' valuations are a lot higher than they were when they bought the team. So, you know, go ahead and I don't think there's going to be a bunch of owners selling. But at the end of the day, that's really how it is. If you don't want to be in this business or in the you know, a business of owning something, then, you know, you got to get out of the game.
Yeah, and it's all short-sighted. That's, you know, from a practical standpoint, not talking about the money or anything, it is short-sighted of the A's to not pay their minor leaguers. It is short-sighted of the owners to create such an antagonistic relationship with the players right before another CBA negotiation. It's short-sighted in all these ways. It's short-sighted to disregard the fans. Like we said it before, if this season doesn't get played for financial reasons, it will have huge financial ramifications for years to come. And, you know, if the owners would think about it that way, yes, you could save, you know, $20 million or whatever this year per owner, but at the cost of hundreds of millions of dollars over the next several years, because if fans get fed up with this and stop coming to games, guess what? Then you're paying the whole salaries that you're under contract for, and you're just playing in emptier stadiums. You know, if the Angels start averaging 11,000 fans a game, guess what, Artie Moreno? You're not going to be very happy with your income. You know, and that's true for every team. And I don't understand. Like, I get the concept. You see people saying, well, they're business owners. They have to fight for every dollar, but you cannot just focus on short-term revenue when you have something as fragile as fandom, because there's so many things competing for baseball fans' attention right now, whether it's other sports or Netflix or whatever. And you know what? If we don't get a baseball season this year, there's going to be a lot of fans who don't come back next year, and I wouldn't blame them. You know, I'll be back. They have me hooked. Sorry. You know, I'll be back, but not everybody is as diehard as I am, and that's good. And for a team to be successful, you need the casual fans, and there are no casual fans, or there are a lot of casual fans who won't come back if they feel like their season got blown up because the millionaires and the billionaires couldn't come to a decision. And I think that's what ownership is counting on. They're counting on the players being willing to compromise because they don't want to lose the whole season. And I think that's a jacked up way of doing business.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, it's going to come down to the players will always be on the short side of things for the most part. So that's the bad part, but we'll see where it goes. Maybe this is the time they take the stand and get what they, you know, should be fighting for. And that propels them forward for the next CBA.
Yep, absolutely. If you want to hear more about the A's situation, I do have it on good authority that Jason Burke of Locked On A's spoke even more passionately about than we did on today's episode of Locked On A's. So, you know, you may not want to listen to it with your kids in the car, from what I hear. There may be some potty words, but, you know, he's right there in the thick of this particular team. So if you want to listen to more about the A's, check out Locked On A's. I think probably most of our shows today on the Locked On Podcast Network will be talking about this, and there's probably a lot of perspectives to be had. So check out any of the other Locked On podcasts related to Major League Baseball teams and see what other people have to say. And, you know, obviously come back for us. You have anything else, Vince, before we wrap this up?
No. Yeah, good episode for us. You know, we kind of get to speak on it, but I'm sure there'll be more in the future, and we'll update as accordingly, but only when there's, like, big things, we'll have maybe bigger episodes about it.
Yeah, we don't want every episode to be about this because we are still a Dodgers podcast, but this was too big to ignore. So thank you all for listening to Locked On Dodgers. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. If you have Apple Podcasts, even if you don't use it, please subscribe there. That helps other people find us. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Semperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog. DMs are open on all of those accounts. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com. Our phone number, if you want to leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text, is 323-863-LOCK 5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree, you just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
And now, tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On MLB. Have a good one.
D. I say D-O, D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all heart, all heart and all thumbs, they're my Los Angeles, your Los Angeles, our Los Angeles. Do you think we'll really win the pennant? Bye!